called away on some last-minute emergency, but she will be listening to the tapes and will participate in these cases. But as far as the argument today, we'll go along without her. First case of the morning, the United States versus Charles Brown. Mr. Mueller.
May it please the court, counsel. Kevin Mueller for the appellant Charles A. Brown. Your Honors, this is a 404B appeal in which the trial court abused its discretion in allowing into evidence Mr. Brown's prior domestic violence conviction. I'd like to focus primarily on the fourth prong of the 404B analysis, that is unfair prejudice, and then follow up with a brief discussion of the second prong, and that is similarity. As this court is aware, evidence is unfairly prejudicial if it can lure the fact finder into declaring guilt on an improper basis, typically one of emotion. Domestic violence is an emotional, hot-button issue. People have very strong views on the subject in general, and particularly when confronted with a specific fact pattern showing such violence. And because of this, this is the kind of evidence that can very likely incite the passions of the jurors and inflame their emotions, and to the point where they're going to rely on that kind of inflammation of their emotions in making their decision. And I can't think of a person who doesn't have his or her emotions inflamed when they hear of a specific evidence of a man battering a woman. And this is exactly what the trial court allowed into evidence. And the implication here, Your Honors, is that because Mr. Brown had a prior domestic battery conviction, and that because he was a bad person, he was a wife beater, and because of this, he must have possessed a gun that they found at Ms. Probst's apartment that night. And I would submit that this is the propensity inference dressed up and disguised as motive or intent. And this is exactly the kind of evidence that Rule 404B is designed to preclude. Now, the government used this domestic violence conviction to get the jury to take a leap of faith here and to convict Mr. Brown. And they did so for three reasons. Number one, the lack of evidence. Two, the facts surrounding the prior domestic violence incident and the crime charged were entirely distinct. And three, the crimes charged, the prior DV incident, in the instant felon in possession of a gun on their face, again, those are entirely distinct. Now, first, the evidence against Brown. Well, there wasn't much. You know, they had the fact that Brown was seen allegedly coming out of the same room where this gun was found. And then they found a gun case, but they later determined that that gun case did not fit the gun they found that evening. But more importantly, what they didn't have. The government did have any kind of eyewitness testimony of anyone seeing Mr. Brown in possession of the gun that evening. They didn't have any forensic evidence tying Mr. Brown to the gun, no fingerprints or DNA, and they didn't have a confession. And because of this, the government needed the jury to make a leap of faith here to convict Mr. Brown. And the domestic violence...
I don't know why you say it's a leap of faith. I mean, she testified that he wasn't supposed to be there, and he was.
That is correct, Your Honor. But
again, called 911.
That is correct. But the facts remain that during that entire 911 call that Ms. Probst placed, there was no evidence that Mr. Brown ever tried to go after her. There was no evidence that he ever tried to seek her out or harm her or even talk to her. You know, I mean, the evidence remains that there's...
Well, the evidence is that she heard an intruder, calls 911, and she's apparently frightened. And he's there without her permission.
That is correct, Your Honor. But it doesn't necessarily follow then because he was allegedly there.
And the gun is not hers.
Well, Your Honor, evidence did come in to show that, she had prior guns in the past in the house. And, in fact, the police officers did find another loaded weapon in Ms. Probst's apartment that night. But the fact remains that there's no direct evidence linking Mr. Brown to the gun that evening. And if you go back and take a look at the prior domestic violence conviction and what he is charged with here, there's simply no similarity between the two crimes charged. In the past, there was no involvement of a gun in the domestic violence incident. And there, unfortunately, it did involve physical harm to Ms. Probst, but here there's no evidence of that. And there's no evidence at all that Mr. Brown even attempted to harm her that night. And Ms. Probst, again, she testified that he never went after her, he never sought her out.
Was there some attempt to connect the necessity, or at least of having a gun, when he, whatever, when he was going into that apartment? Because I would have this same question: is what's the point? Clearly, he broke in the apartment, kicked the door in, something or other, and got in there. I don't think there's any question about that, is there?
No, I think, Your Honor, there is a question about whether or not...
About whether or not he kicked in the door and came in?
I think there is. Mr. Brown never admitted to that. In fact...
No, no, wait a minute. She calls 911. Here's glass breaking, something like that. Calls 911. The police come, and he's there, and he's not... She says he's not supposed to be. Now, is it your position that it was okay he was there and someone else kicked in the door?
Your Honor, it was the defense's theory at trial that Mr. Brown was there with permission. He had previously been living with Ms. Probst up until a week
So
before.
He was sleeping just like her, at least your assumption, and right. Somebody else kicked in the door.
Your Honor, the facts show that he came out of the bedroom and said something to the effect of, what's going on here? I was sleeping. And he was apparently stripped down to his boxers. And this would be completely consistent with the fact that he had, and Ms. Probst testified, that he had been living with her up until about a week prior. And, Your Honor, the evidence also shows that they did stop another individual coming out of the apartment complex. The police officers did that evening. And so, again, it is Brown's theory that, and Your Honor, more importantly, that issue was not before the court. It was not before the jury. Whether and how Mr. Brown came to be into that apartment that night was simply not an issue that the jury was to consider.
I'm trying to back up and connect the gun and why he would bring a gun with him when he came in the house or while he was there, because that's really what the crime is, isn't it? And isn't that your claim? You say that the prior... domestic violence, I guess he run her off the road with a car or something like that, whatever he did, it was different than this. That was to show something, we'll ask the other side what it was to show, but I assume you're saying it doesn't show any reason to have a gun. Is that your position?
Kind of. I think it is just kind of a stretch, huh? To say that because he was involved in this domestic incident years prior, that all of a sudden gave him motive to possess or be in the apartment that evening. I feel
so
like
it's the presence in the apartment that you think they use this prior domestic violence?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
What is the reason your client would perceive as using this? Why is it prejudicial? But what using this prior domestic violence, what does it show? How does it connect? Is it something to do with why he's in the apartment or whether he's in the apartment?
Because, Your Honor, he was involved in, and he was previously convicted of a domestic battery in the past. He must be a bad person. He must have this incredible propensity to harm Ms. Probst. And okay. We would submit that that's highly and it's unfairly prejudicial.
So there isn't any connection with the gun and that prior...
I don't believe so, and that's why it is so unfairly prejudicial. There's a disconnect here between the motive necessary for...
Unless they deny he was there or deny he broke in.
Excuse me?
If he denies that he broke in the apartment, he was just in there asleep.
Correct.
Then that would offset that, say, well, he's done this before. Whereas if it has something to do with the gun... That's where I don't understand it. But if it's just whether or not he was there, then maybe that's the reason.
Well, I think it's both, Your Honor. The prosecution here definitely painted Mr. Brown as someone who had broken into the apartment and had this overall, I think the word they use in their brief is nefarious motive to be in there and to harm Ms. Probst that night. But, you know, when in fact that's entirely at odds with the evidence here. There's no evidence of any kind of physical harm or abuse to Ms. Probst. And I see that I'm going to my rebuttal time.
That's fine. You can reserve it.
And if the court has no further questions, I'll step down for now.
Okay. Mr. Rinka.
Please, the court. Counsel, good morning. Matthew Rinka on behalf of the United States. Prior to the admission of this evidence at trial, the court below went to great lengths to analyze the admission of this evidence in the framework of both 404B and the case law of this court. It was admitted properly, as the district court indicated, for the purpose of showing motive, intent, and certainly the defendant's knowledge of the handgun.
You're connecting it to the gun, aren't you?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You're connecting that prior situation to the gun. Is that right?
Judge, yes. The government's position is
He's talking about whether or not he's in the apartment and whether he would be the kind of guy that would kick the door down and barge in. And apparently you're saying it gives him a motive to have a gun when he was in there.
The motive, Judge, is that it was his motive to be there that night. It's the context of the crime as it occurred that night, the larger context of his possession of the firearm that night, and his motive for possessing the firearm that night was, in the government's position, to go in there and use that firearm to cause serious harm to the young lady that lived there and or her young child. Now, in assessing
hers and his young child.
I'm sorry, Judge.
Hers and his young child, right? You said her young child.
He's the father of the child, isn't
he? He is the father of her child, yes, that's correct. But when we look at the evidence itself of that prior roadside incident and compare it to what we have going on that night, Judge, the evidence of that roadside incident is no scarier, no more inflammatory, no more egregious than the evidence that the jury was already going to hear about the facts and circumstances of what happened that night. You're talking about a roadside incident in daylight, in the presence of other people, and comparing it to an armed man breaking in to someone's house surreptitiously in the middle of the night when her young child was present. And the government's position is that the evidence of that roadside incident cleared up a conceptual void that would have been in the story. And had that evidence not been admitted, the jury would have been left wondering about a very significant part of the relationship between these two people.
What was the void?
The void, Judge, was that there have been in the past circumstances where Mr. Brown had attacked this young lady.
Okay.
That's the void.
So the void is that you needed to show prior acts to demonstrate that the act that he's accused of here, that is, well, the whole act is breaking into the apartment, rather violently breaking the glass, and that he would, it was not out of the question that he did that. I guess my question then is, what's the connection with the gun?
Okay. The connection with the gun, Judge, is that, and this goes to what the void is, because had there not been that prior road rage incident.
It didn't involve a gun.
Which didn't involve a gun, admittedly. Had that incident not occurred, okay, it would have been more plausible, perhaps, the defendant's story that he was just breaking in, he was bringing his stuff with him or what have you. But the fact of the matter is that in the past, this defendant has attacked Ms. Probst at times when she had distanced herself from him. Out of the blue, he had attacked her. And what the government is saying is that this evidence goes to show his motive that night for going to that residence with the firearm, with the rope, with the gloves, breaking in, instead of just knocking on the door, breaking the door in. All right, and then proceeding to what appeared to be plan to commit a more serious offense. Now, that's the connection that the government sees, Judge. It's his motive in taking that firearm that night.
Did he know? Does any evidence, does the record show anything about whether or not he knew there was she had a gun, a loaded gun?
I'm sorry, is there any?
She had a loaded gun, right?
She did,
yes. In her room. Is there any evidence that he knew that? From her or anywhere else?
I can't tell you that, Judge. I'm not sure that he knew that. It seemed that...
All right, well, there's no evidence of it then, that he
knew.
There
was discussion, Judge, about the fact, on cross-examination, there was discussion about the fact that she had purchased other guns Whether or not that information came from the defendant or not, the defense counsel questioned her about she had purchased guns previously, and I seem to recall there was talk about he had been there when they had purchased guns, she had purchased guns, or that gun. But it was in passing.
Yeah, okay. No, I fully see about the prior violence and the domestic violence, that sort of thing, connecting what he was maybe going to do the same thing. I'm just finding it a little more remote as far as, because the whole issue here is the gun possession. And he denies it was his. It was in the baby crib or something?
The government's position, Judge, is that this was a completely circumstantial case. We didn't find the defendant possessing the actual firearm. It was a case in which we had to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Mm-hmm. And this prior incident was one very large piece of the puzzle because it did connect him with violent attacks against Ms. Probst. It did give him motive and an intent to go there that night after she had once again distanced herself from him mm-hmm. and kicked him out of the apartment. And absent the circumstantial evidence that we had, I mean, you know, there would be no case, really. But again, the government points out that this particular set of facts that were introduced under 404B were no more egregious than the actual facts of the crime itself and his possession of the firearm that night. So under a balancing test of more prejudicial than probative, certainly it's probative to show knowledge and intent, but is no more prejudicial than the facts of the actual crime that evening. Additionally, I would just point out that, as I'm sure the court is well aware, that at the time of trial, both at the time that the evidence came in and then subsequently at the close of the evidence, the district court clearly and seriously warned the jurors about the use of this evidence. Both times told them it could only be used for the limited purpose under which it was admitted, to show knowledge and intent and motive.
Did he say knowledge, intent, and motive of what?
The intent to possess the firearm.
Was that part of the admonition or instruction? Did you mention the firearm?
The admission of the firearm, yes, Judge. The district judge warned the jurors immediately following the evidence coming in that it was only coming in to show his knowledge and his intent to possess the firearm that night.
Okay, that was what the judge said. That was the instruction. Okay, I want to... You know, if we're talking about motive and intent, because, you know, I'm juggling two different things. One, connection to the gun. One, the likelihood that he broke in somewhat with violent intent. And those are two things as far as I'm concerned. But he was convicted of the gun possession. And if that was the instruction to the jury, motive, intent, whatever, as with regard to the gun.
I believe it was, Judge. The record contains, obviously, both of the instructions, but it was that the limited purpose of admitting this evidence was to show, mm-hmm. you know, knowledge and intent.
You can recite the words in the rule, but I wondered if it went motive, knowledge, intent, for what or of what.
The argument, the government's position, is it was knowledge and intent of the possession of the firearm. Which
well,
was
is that,
charged with.
I just am just asking if that's what she said or whether it just stopped with motive and intent, which, you know, that generically at least covers it. But I don't know. I'm just asking what actually we can look at it. But I just wanted to see where your position was.
Of course, then, as well, the government's position is that the motive here is obviously crucial. It makes his possession more probable than not. And absent that evidence, and certainly the prior assault supports the inference that he had gone there that night to cause serious harm. He'd broken into the house. He had done so under the cover of darkness. And did so with a firearm. And there was other evidence to connect him to the firearm. The holster of the case was found on top of his clothes in the room that he emerged from. There's a deputy's testimony that the deputy initially, Sorry, may I just finish my sentence?
Yeah, go ahead.
When he initially entered the house, he saw him run from the kitchen to the bedroom wearing clothes, and then he emerged, and he didn't have clothes on, so.
Okay. Mr. Mueller.
Your Honors. The government essentially concedes that this is a circumstantial case, and because of this, they needed to rely improperly here on a series of inferences. And as this court stated in U.S. v. Thomas, and that's a case where this court reversed and remanded.
Let me ask you this. I'm a little confused as to what your point really is. As I see it, the relationship between these two people could be fully explored at trial. No problem with that. Why would somebody be in the house at that hour of the morning and so on and so forth? That's pretty much fair game. The relationship and her testimony about what had happened on this prior incident. Are you contesting that that testimony should not have been admitted, or just the fact that he was convicted of this domestic battery charge? That he had a conviction.
And, Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time, but I'll answer
sure,
the question.
Sure, go ahead.
Both, because the misdemeanor domestic violence battery conviction was not the underlying felony here, obviously, as it was a misdemeanor. But, you know, this is the kind in
regard- Well, he stipulated that he had a felony record. He had a number of major felonies here, and if he would have testified, he would have been those would have been fair game to be admitted to attack his credibility for any story he might have offered. The government put in this misdemeanor battery conviction itself. So, and your point is that both the testimony, the underlying relationship, and the fact that there was a conviction from this prior incident, both of them should have been excluded.
I agree, Your Honor, and simply because the only plausible reason to have this in is to paint Mr. Brown as a bad person and to lure the jury into a sequence of bad character reasonings, because he had this run-in with Ms. Probst before. Somehow it makes it he's that much more prone to have simply possessed a gun. And again, I will emphasize that's the only charge that was before the jury and before the court in the instant trial.
I think you'd have a much better case if the person he had broken into in the prior incident wasn't the person involved in this case.
Your Honor, unfortunately, we deal with the facts that as they're given to us.
Okay.
I thank the court for its time.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel.